Welcome to Seize the GM, a show about how to seize the GM seat and run with it. I'm your host, Zended.
I'm your co-host, Jules.
And I'm the other co-host, Null Operations.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a bunch of friends who want to play an RPG but have no one to run it? You want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it?
Well, we're here to help you do just that. Each week, the three of us are going to discuss various GMing topics. Terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back, relax, and let's hit that GM seat hard. Banter, banter, banter. And we're doing banter, folks. All right, so. What has everybody been up to this week?
A lot of writing and a whole lot of nothing else.
Okay. All right. All
right. Now, the work week was, well, standard work week, but Friday night had a wedding at a buddy's of mine, and Saturday I had some family come visit, and, well, we watched a lot of anime, and they brought over the Attack on Titan PS4 game, and that was actually pretty sweet.
I've seen videos of really that game. It looks pretty fun.
Yeah, it kind of has like the Spider-Man swinging through everything kind of a feel to it. Problem is, I've been playing so much Bloodborne. It took me a while to get the new controls, but it's a lot of fun. It really, really is.
Oh, fun.
Cool.
How about you, dude?
Well, I had a really fun week. We talked about my Saturday that took 20 minutes to belabor my poor sad excuse for a day where I busted my phone, and by busted I mean shattered in two places my screen.
Yikes.
Where if I didn't have one of those plastic finger thingies to keep the smudging from getting really bad.
Oh, the protectors?
Yeah, it would be a brick, a very small, thin iPhone brick, but that's what it would be. Because one of the corners where it got hit, but it didn't actually, the adhesive on it was already starting to go, it's completely come off and it's just glass dust.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Recommend Android?
You may, but it won't happen. The problem is that once you get an iPhone,
mm-hmm. You have to stay with it, don't you?
You kind of do, because otherwise it's a pain in the ass to move everything from Apple back to Android and Android back to... It's so complicated. And I don't have to have a super customized exactly how I want it to be really elaborate texting MP3 player.
But you could, like, custom choose your own. Like, they have some models now that, like, explode on command.
They do. You know what, though? I don't want it to explode on command. I want it to not
out,
do
man.
That.
You're missing out.
Not really. Not really. But so I had to go with a color that I didn't exactly want, but I'm going to case it so it doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah.
iPhones come in other colors than black or white.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, the new one's got like, it's got a shiny black, it's got a matte black, it's got silver, it's got gold, which is the one I'm getting, and then rose gold, which is just pink.
But probably a little bit more shimmery, I guess.
It's metallic. It's not really gold, it's pink.
My armor is lightish red in color. They got a name for lightish red. Pink.
Yeah, it's pink. You know, don't call it something special when it's really just pink.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care, but I had to get the not base storage because I listen to a lot of podcasts and music. I really need to have something that can store
mm-hmm.
those things on it.
So you got a phone that you could switch out your SD card in, so you can put a big one in there, right?
I don't need to. I've got a 128 gig hard drive in mine.
It's not enough.
It is for what I do. The problem is that if I wanted to incorporate my entire iTunes library onto my phone, they don't make a phone big enough. I have a 2 terabyte drive full of music.
Makes sense. That makes sense.
I don't have a phone that will hold that much music. They don't make anything that holds that much music aside from an external hard drive, which is what I have.
Fair enough.
So I put the songs that I really want on it, and I leave it at that. So.
That's the one thing about it is, you know, you're used to Apple products. You stay with them. I mean, I originally, this is before even smartphones came out. I had one of the big, like, 160 gig iPods where you could actually watch movies and, you know, yeah. Teeny tiny eye strain O-Vision. But, you know, and the thing is, though, that fell out of the car one time and then got ran over.
Ooh.
So that was the end of that.
Yeah.
And since, I guess for me, I, you know, it's like I keep almost all my stuff now, you know, on Google Play, on Amazon Music or something like that. So as long as I have an internet connection, I can stream. And if it's something bigger, you know, I have in my phone, I have a dedicated SD card specifically just so I can like download whatever the heck so I can, you know, work out or whatever the heck while it's going.
Yeah.
You know, it's like over time, you never imagine that any of your, like, you know, media collections, books, audio, video will get that big. And then you're sitting looking at a 3 terabyte drive and go, should I upgrade?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. See, I completely understand having that big of a library because we inherited my wife's old album collection of actual vinyl, and having to move the physical medium of that many records, I'm like, you know what? I can believe this could fill up a couple hard drives.
Oh. Do you guys have a tube amp to listen to them?
Nope.
Yeah.
And we have, like, some of the old records that are, like, they feel almost like glass.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god.
One of these days we'll pick up a machine to listen to them.
Oh dude, I have speaking of vinyl, I have to go there because I as a Christmas present one year, I got the original Nightmare Before Christmas soundtrack with
cool.
The Jack with the snowflake on one side and on the other side is Sally's face.
Nice.
It is so cool. And, like, I've got a couple of other, like, just, like, great iconic things from, like, when I was growing up. Not that Nightmare on Elm Street was. That was way after that.
Nightmare Before Christmas, you mean, not Nightmare on Elm Street. You just said it again.
Well, that's because it's getting close to Halloween, so I'm, like, I'm getting in a horror mood, so.
Yeah, it makes sense.
You have to forgive me.
No, it makes sense. It makes sense. That's, you know, everyone, like, for me, it's the, yeah, Halloween's okay, nice costuming, but the day after, discount on all things candy.
Yeah, you're right.
There is that. There is that. But, thinking of things like that, I think we're going to go ahead and go right into our next topic, which is inspiration. Where you draw it from, where you steal it from, in some people's cases. You know what? They say good artists imitate, great artists steal.
And after you steal, sue people who steal from you.
Yeah.
Quote Steve Jobs.
Oh, that's me.
So, well, I know I personally draw inspiration from so many different sources.
You name the medium, we draw inspiration from it.
Yeah. There's one in particular, and I want to do it at some point. I don't know if I'll ever get a chance to, but I really I have drawn so much inspiration that I literally want to steal it almost whole cloth and reuse it is Queensryche Operation Mindcrime and run it in Shadowrun.
I am unfamiliar with that one.
Operation Mindcrime? The original Seattle sound before grunge came around and ruined it? Queensryche is like one of the best bands ever.
Oh. Sorry, you were I heard it and I immediately was thinking, oh, is this like a novel that I've not... No, I know. Queensryche. I know Queensryche. I was thinking like, oh, this was some kind of novel you were talking about.
No, they do. It's a rock opera.
That one I know of. I don't know why my mind went to, you know...
Something else?
I blame you guys. That's your fault. That's why I'm thinking that.
All right. But... Yeah, at some point I would love to run a Shadowrun game where people are the victims of an organization like the one that oversees Operation Mindcrime.
Oh yeah.
And like just puppet them around doing whatever I want them to do. So I've wanted to do that for years and I've never been able to find a group that's willing to do it. Sad faces, sad.
I'll be honest. People I've heard will use like certain music as kind of backgroundish or something to get them in the mood. But I've never thought of yoinking inspiration directly from like a song like that.
Oh God! Yeah, well,
I
mean,
I completely have done that.
I never
there's
have.
A couple of short stories that are literally Pink Floyd albums that I would listen to again and again. And kind of turn them into short stories that it's not directly the album, but if you know it's based on that, you can kind of go, oh yeah, that, oh, that, that part is that song. Oh, and okay.
Yeah. So, well, that's like, I'm sure Jules, with your classical training and education, you have.
Oh yeah, rub
read.
It in. Make me sound like the snob.
You have read Rime of the Ancient Mariner. You went to public school. Everyone read it.
No, it wasn't assigned reading at school. I read it because I was bored.
Oh my God, that was like assigned. Okay, that explains why I'm
Derek. Remember, you are the old one. So
yeah. So remember, I'm. I'm the Oregon Trail generation thing here going.
When I was in
school. We are.
Rime of the Ancient Mariner was a like, I don't even know, it's a poem that you had to read. And it's one of the Greek guys, Homer something. I think Homer, one of those guys wrote it. And
No.
Somebody, I don't remember. This was 25, 30 years ago that I read it.
it's a poem by Samuel Coleridge.
Is it? Rime of the Ancient.
No, Rime of the Ancient Mariner is I think it was the longest poem he ever wrote. This thing is huge.
Yeah, it is. Well, okay, so now you've heard of Iron Maiden.
Duh.
You know they did a song called Rime of the Ancient Mariner where they literally read the poem to music.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, they would have us do a presentation on Rime of the Ancient Mariner, and always the stoner kid played Iron Maidens.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Like,
I feel sorry
class.
For the teachers.
Yes. Well, and that was just it. They were always like, okay, by the time I got around to where it was part of our curriculum, like when I had that in our class, they said, no one can play Iron Maiden. We all know that they did it. Like, it was in the syllabus that we got that
when
we do this, you do not get to use this because everybody knows that it's been done.
Good point.
You know, and just stop there. And so, but like, you know, that's an inspiration. Just the reading of that can be an inspiration for a whole string. Movies, obviously. I mean, stealing just setting pieces or character ideas.
Yeah,
for example, James Cameron, once upon a time, made a movie named Avatar. He probably wrote it after watching Ferngully.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I miss you, Robin Williams.
And then promptly sued, what was it? Cartoon Network, because they were doing a Avatar the Last Airbender movie, so that they couldn't use Avatar in their name because it might get confusing.
Yeah, considering though that before the movie came out, that had already been in production and all that other stuff, so. Eh.
But Avatar the Last Airbender had been a TV series that had been off the air for 2 or 3 years.
But they had
four.
Yeah, and they had also, at that time, there was Avatar the Last Airbender. They had a couple of books out, on the artwork, and a couple of graphic novels.
But they lost the ability to put Avatar on the title of their movie.
Different medium.
Because they sued over... James Cameron sued Nickelodeon, I think, is who did it, over having that name in their movie. Because it would be too confusing for audiences.
To be fair, it's best the Avatar Last Airbender movie is forgotten anyway.
Oh, God, yes. Bury that, please.
I've thought about doing a D&D game based on the Last Airbender setting, like the world. Mm-hmm. I thought that would be fun. It'd be really hard to do, but I thought it would be fun.
Not really. You just have to have a few classes together.
You'd have to create totally new classes, so benders would have to be, like, totally reconfigured.
You wouldn't have to redo too many new classes. The monk by itself can handle a lot of it. And I know we're kind of going on a little bit of a tangent here. But, for example, in 3.5, one of my players has recently discovered that Player Handbook 2 offers a lot of interesting feats for monks, including the ability to shoot Dragon Ball Z-esque Ki Blast and Fire Blast.
Yeah.
Those are feats you could take. I was surprised when I found out about that as a Game Master, but hey, it was in the books, and I said, you know what? Okay.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
I have drawn so much inspiration from movies and even comic books for regular games. Like, I'll be reading, like, a Spider-Man comic or something and be like, that would be amazing to do in D&D or in Shadowrun. Or Green Arrow was the inspiration for my Shadow Shot character in Shadowrun.
Excuse me.
Like, well, that was literally the inspiration. It was a direct line.
Fair enough.
Don't feel bad. Well, for me, all right, for my other Shadowrun character, not the one I'm playing in, you know, the one we did for the one shot, I outright stole the name from Brutal Legend, of course. But yeah. I based the character concept, most of it, taken from Cole from Gears of War.
Okay.
You know, my character was an urban brawler. Cole in Gears of War was a star thrashball player. But, you know, I outright ripped the name Ormagoden because that sounded so freaking metal. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But, I mean, even going to game references too, the D&D campaign I've been running, as I've said a couple times, is Final Fantasy themed. It is exact ripoffs of several encounters from Final Fantasy, several major concepts from it, because, you know, it's cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And one of the ones I did, at least for some of my games, when I was much younger and much skinnier and much more energetic way back in the day, I loved there were like youth fiction horror, like Christopher Pike, R.L. Stine, like Fear Street, I kind of outgrew them as they were really getting into high popularity. but I've used, you know, certain bits from those, you know, those young adult stories, because honestly, they're really, really simple to implement. And then your characters kind of move around. You already know the world because you already seen what happens with one group of dudes going through this. So, yeah. And reading it. And the thing is, with a lot of the young adult horror, it's not so much world-centric. It's very, very character-driven. So you see how the world itself reacts to people poking and pushing and prodding on it.
Yeah, and one of the other things that I have noticed with that age demographic is it's generally, as a general rule, it's not overtly graphically gory.
No, it lets your mind go creepy.
Which to me has always been a better way to do horror, is you don't show the monster, show what the monster leaves behind.
Or, you know, or pretty much not even that, that kind of sense, like before the monster comes, you might hear something crackle, you might hear breathing, you might hear, you know, something, and then it's gone.
Yeah.
It's that little, psst, hey, pay attention. And then you're like, what is that? Because you will scare yourself better. And that's the one thing I like about it, because as a GM, it allows the players to do more of the work for you. And while you're watching it, you're like, oh boy, this is going to be funny. That's the great thing about it.
And actually, a lot of things with like movies doing that as a general rule, music plays a very key role, especially when you're doing stuff like horror, you know?
Yeah, Silent Hill soundtrack. You wouldn't want to listen to that normally, but but the thing is, like, you put that in context when you're walking in, it's like you have no area looking around, or I will use Portal 2 because I love that. And I love you, Valve. Thank you for giving the soundtrack away for free on your website. It's Songs to Test To. I highly recommend it. But in certain songs, I could listen to this in the car. It's kind of like, you know, a little zen. But when you're playing it, you know, it's like something creeping up your neck. Or when you're in this one area, the song behind it is, I think it's Memories of Ratman, who's, you know, originally woke Chell up and started Portal 2. And it's cool, but you hear almost like very silent, almost like maniacal screams, but it's not like long extended. It's like if you are laughing, screaming, but panicked.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, you could take those kind of sound effects, you know, or something, and you might be listening to it, and then you might be picked up with, okay, you hear that sound, and they're like, oh my gosh, a mad skull in the center of a dungeon, you know, and you walk around, and it just looks at you, and it starts laughing, and you're like, what could you do with that? Is that like a leftover from something? Or, you know, is that a trap that the guy that built this originally did?
Yeah.
That's the one thing I do like, especially with video game soundtracks, because they tie into the action so well. You could just play that, you know, good grief, Bastion soundtrack. You know, if you wanted to do like a Wild West game, you could listen to that and kind of get inspiration for like some of the heaviness and some of the more jovial bits and some of the sad bits, because that kind of music would fit. It would fit in like a Firefly campaign.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, great, great universe. The mechanics are, but
it's because it's Cortex.
Yeah. But I do like that.
Some people love Cortex, but I'm not one of them.
Not my drive. But hey, you know.
Yeah, and there's it's really fun because there's one game that I own that I, in the adventure, the, like one of the first published adventures, it includes a CD. And the CD is all music. And parts of it are like radio broadcasts. set in the game world. And it's really fun and kind of cool that those are in there. And if you know the game world, like, you could listen to it normally and just be like, this is kind of weird, kind of mellowy, jivey 90s, like early 90s, mid 90s music. Kind of weird, but okay. And then you find out it's like for a game, and it's like, it adds a whole nother depth to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually used that to draw inspiration for other games that have nothing to do with that game.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So.
The biggest one, though, because you originally did, like, with music for you. I mean, I'm thinking is, like, I couldn't figure out, because it's been niggling my brain since you brought it up. And I'm like, I've never used, I'm like, nope, I'm a liar. Jules right here is a liar. There are two musicians, and it's Gordon Lightfoot and Roger Whittaker. And yes, that stuff is old as crap, but it's good. But Gordon Lightfoot had this one song, and it was about like the true story. It's called "The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald," and a guy's on a ship. Storm comes in, and you know, it just like. How just like horrible and harrowing it was, and it's just like, you know, you could pull that into a D&D game or Roger Whittaker. This song is sad as all get out. It's called "The Last Farewell," and it's about a guy who is he's in the islands, and you know, this is England's getting ready to go to war, and he is saying goodbye to his love for the last time, and you're thinking about it, and it's just like. Oh my gosh, how beautiful the words were to contrast the feel of it. So, you know, if you're running, you know, you can pull that into a Shadowrun game. You can do that into D&D. You can pull, and heck, almost anything, because if you, that stark contrast, and you can use like the basics for it, you know, just like, you know, it's like you're like a family of elves and, you know, like you're in one of the further, you know, provinces way away from, you know, where the main group is, but something horrible happens and you're forced to, you know, go and fight the blight over there, and you're leaving your beautiful lands to look at hell in the face.
Yeah.
And I was wondering why it was just like, nah, but then again, I was thinking of, you know, musicians like Motorhead or something like that, or I'm like, nah, I don't really get it from that, but, you know, songs I was kind of forced to listen to on long, long road trips with my family. Who knew they'd have a better effect?
Yeah.
Yeah. But by the way, guys, if you get a chance to listen to those, oh my God, heartbreaking. Yeah, it was just one of those, really? And, you know, and an 8-year-old doesn't really understand all the, you know, ins and outs of, you know, because I didn't know much about World War II when I first heard that song. So
Now
I'm older. I'm like, aha, in the feels.
Yeah. Yeah. See, and then I also do, because I build landscape and stuff like that for games. And I've actually built entire, like, big things based on a mini. Like, I've pulled inspiration for an entire game based on a single mini.
Okay, that's awesome.
I can believe it.
Well, like, I actually have... Reaper did, it's a kaiju. It's a kaiju monster. Mm-hmm. And I finished mine after, I got it for Christmas, and I finished it like 3 months ago. I took like a 2-month period off where I wasn't working on it. And I got the whole thing done finally. And it looks amazing. And I'm like, okay, the characters have to be at least 17th level to fight something that's that big. And like, I'm statting him out as a Pathfinder monster.
Ooh.
Because I'm just like, because they have in the game system, they actually have things like they have kaiju. And they've kind of given, you know, here's how you kind of make some. And it's kind of a framework and you get to build your own things. So I'm like, I'm going to build a kaiju. And I'm going to base it off of the one I've got because he's amazing.
That's freaking brilliant.
So,
I mean, you're a great craftsman, so that's actually really kind of neat.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not. I tried to build a mini. I glued myself together. You know, it's I glued myself to myself.
Yeah, this thing had. I used liquid green stuff to see in all of the seams where things glued together so that it all, like, it's pretty seamless. And painted this thing from top to bottom. I think it ended up with 15 coats when it was all said and done.
Dude!
Yeah, it's got a base black, and then I based those stones are then gray with like a couple of layers of more grays on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the actual kaiju itself is started out with a base of dark green, and I went all the way up and then did like browns, and I've got pink for his tongue, and his teeth are all white. So I went all the way from like that black all the way up to white. And it's got browns and greens in it.
Ooh.
It's beautiful when it was done. And I don't use a single wash on it. This is literally all just paint.
I'm just imagining that.
Pictures up.
Yeah, you can't just hide it. You can't hide awesome from the world like that. How dare you, sir?
I think it was on my Facebook page at one point, I think.
Yeah, but it's not on CZGM. Yeah. So put it on CZGM for crying out loud.
Well, okay, hold on now. In my defense, my phone literally just exploded, so.
Oh, I know, but as soon as you get your new phone, this must be remedied.
I will see what I can do about getting those pictures up.
Whee!
On the Facebook page. Yeah, and like if. Especially with stuff like this, I mean, that's just one piece. Like, I've got my Bones 3 coming, and I've got, like, some crazy minis that are coming in that. I think I've even got, like, a brain in a jar coming, which I can't wait for.
Brain in a jar?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I make props and stuff. My wife made, we were doing an adventure, and they basically had in it, they said, on the desk of this guy is a worm of Caius in a vial jar of, you know, I think it was like a potion of gentle repose or something. It's so that it didn't die.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that would be so cool to be able to, when the players go through the desk and they find this, I can literally hand them a jar with this thing in it. And so my wife was like, well, what does it have to look like? I'm like, well, this is kind of what they look like. So she sculpted a worm of Caius. And then we used that resin, the clear resin that you can pour and it looks like water.
Mm-hmm.
And she put like a drop of blue ink so that it turned it kind of bluish. But it was a salt, and it was a salt jar, so it was thin enough that it could fit down in it, and then when it was all done, she took the cap, and she actually oiled a pit of leather, and like wound it and knotted it off. So it's like,
dude,
it's beautiful. I'll take pictures of that one too.
Oh yeah.
But. That being where we're at, I think we're going to basically draw inspiration from everything around you, including crowds of people.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can do it. It's yeah.
Even
it's
if you
everywhere.
Hear one side of a phone argument, not kidding.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to do a murder mystery, you know, see some angry dude right outside of the Walmart and he's like, I can't believe you did this to me, Jessica. What you thinking about? And just hearing one side of the conversation. You'd be pretty amazed what your mind is thinking is on the other side. And then where did that come from? Because that'd be.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I think we are going to hold this here. And if anybody else has like ideas for where they draw inspiration, go to the Facebook page and leave us comments there or on the website. Please. But I think for now, we're going to stop this and we're going to jump into our next segment, which is...
Stat block.
Stat blocks! Boom, 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 boom. I know. So, Justin has his long, amazing one.
It's a common thread so far.
Yeah, it is. It's great, though. And Jules is actually long. Mine is probably the shortest one, so I'm going to do mine first.
Yay!
And mine is the Broken Arrow. It's a bow or Fletcher shop. It's kind of like a one-stop shop for all of your archery needs. Commercial insert here. The open flow of the shop feels almost like a quiet forest glen. The barrels of arrows and bolts and plus all of the little bits that you need for bows and fletching are all around, showing that this place is a shop that knows how to make all types of bows. Hanging from the framing around the counter are the bodies of crossbows and regular bows as well. The area behind the counter can actually be opened to show the archery range behind the shop. The man, if he can be called such, looks like an old and gnarled tree, kind of like some of the wood pieces that are in here. He goes by Sandril. He's a half-elf with larger-than-normal ears. He might be mistaken for an elf, but no elf has ever looked this old. His hands look crooked, like they had been broken several times, but they move with a dexterity and strength that their appearance belies. He is quiet and gentle nature that helps to put people at ease. The Broken Arrow.
Nice.
Well done, sir. Well done.
All right, so. Jules, you're up.
All right. All right. Mine's called The Interesting MacGuffin. You always have a standard idea for starting a quest. There's an old dude, and he says that a wicked necromancer is kidnapping the locals to use in his experiments. Or your contact in Cyberpunk tells you that Gideon, who runs the local pawn shop, sells info on his clients to the corpse. There's a local preacher that says there's a powerful manitou that lurks in an abandoned mineshaft. These way of giving quests are straightforward. There's a problem, and your players are said go and fix it, or go and stop it, and go and resolve it. Usually with a final result in mind. But how about a quest with no final result? Just a vague question that sits in the back of the minds of the players. Enter the interesting MacGuffin. This kind of item can be introduced in an underhanded almost as an afterthought. For instance, your posse from Deadlands just killed a harrowed gunslinger, and you're rifling through his pockets and you see if you can get any identification of who this guy was or how he became harrowed. In his breast pocket of his shirt, you find a bullet. It's jet black. There's no maker's mark on it, and your huckster gets a really bad feeling when he's holding it, and your blessed won't even look at it. So what is this bullet? Why was it made? What was its purpose? And how did this harrowed get a hold of it? That's your interesting MacGuffin. You need to make the MacGuffin just puzzling enough so that the time between linear missions, your players want to spend a little time investigating and unraveling its mysteries. It can be anything depending on your settings. A broken piece of an ancient tablet with weird writing on it. An encrypted piece of data that sticks behind in your data log. A flower that never wilt but changes color for some reason. As the GM, you know all about it and what it does, but your players don't. And there's an upside and a downside with these kind of items. The downside is that sometimes players just chuck it in with the rest of the loot and forget about it. Or they may inadvertently find a way to get all the mysteries resolved with no issues. Don't worry if that happens. Just run with it. And don't try to force things on your players. The trick as a GM is not to be invested in your interesting MacGuffin. Just make sure that you remember what your players did with it, even if they forgot. Like when your players are stopped by security in order to turn out their pockets. Now they have to think on their feet and explain the interesting MacGuffin to their captors. The upside? It gets your characters thinking. Not just out of character, but in character as well. Your science type might want to analyze it. The greedy thief might want to try and pawn it. And sometimes that can have hilarious results. The lawman may want to get it back to its owner. and your mystic may want to unravel its deepest secrets. Nice thing about this item is it can be eventually turned into an awesome quest in and of itself. Or they may abandon their current quest to even figure out what it is once somebody gets this brilliant aha moment. Just be prepared to think on your feet. The MacGuffin's inherent flexibility can have the characters approach it out of left field sometimes. And boy, does that get weird.
Cool. That's fine.
Yay. Nice. All right, it's all yours, buddy. Go for it.
All right.
Blow our minds.
The omnipotent fallacy. When unrelented evil comes pouring over the land, the light of the angel made flesh can push them back. The party is saved as the Johnson and his goons come storming in, taking out the go-gangers. The general listens and a nuclear option is diverted, so better special forces may move in on the alien invaders. Great powers sometimes find itself an ally instead of an enemy to our protagonist, but such power sometimes offers a heaven-bound level of vision, and small details can be lost. Overconfident and sure, the omnipotent fallacy uses their abilities like clubs to solve problems, and in many ways, create waves that break open more rifts. This NPC is a wild card. Pointed the right way, and they assume they can solve the world's problems in an instant, but without regard to cost and loss. Their assumption on being right can put them at odds to players who haven't earned their trust, and keeping them calm, happy, and loyal is a juggling act. Such power isn't something a player wants to contend with, whether it comes from a great wizard, a dragon, a CEO, powerful AI, or even a literal god. Once they've assumed the players are enemies, it'll be hard to convince them otherwise without equal force. The omnipotent fallacy exists in most genres, often in the role as a figurative or literal deus ex machina, gods and demons in fantasy realms attempting to understand mortal risk and solving issues with lightning, CEOs and spy masters trying to keep their fingers on the pulse of an ever-deepening world, military leaders sure of their place on a battlefield. The NPC need not have physical unlimited powers, but merely the ability to command such power even through chains of minions. The worst position a player can find themselves is on the wrong side of the omnipotent fallacy, finding out they're wrong after they've acted. After they've killed loved ones, destroyed cities, ended the lives of innocents and guilties alike. These acts can send the figure sprawling in several hostile directions. They may become self-reflective and depressed, turning inward and losing their great power. They may lash out and blame others for being fooled. Or worse, they can assume the loss and misdirected actions as proof of their conviction and dive deeper into dangerous beliefs. At this point, the player can try to guide them back to the truth path and solve the problems their misdirection has caused, or seek to destroy the omnipotent figure and dismantle them before they can do further harm.
Nice.
Well done, sir. Well
so
done.
Tip to Gandalf there.
Yeah. Nice. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that wraps up stat blocks, which leaves us with lexicon. Doom, doom, doom. Today is a fun word. Orgure, which is a noun. It's not spelled like it's pronounced. Does anyone have an idea what this word means?
I'd have to see it spelled. I hate to say it.
O-R-D-U-R-E.
Orgure.
Sounds like you're saying an odor.
Yeah, it's not. I've got it.
The D is actually a J.
Because based on the way you're saying it's spelled, it sounds like you'd be like almost spelling a variant on the word odor.
Aha! Which... Well, see, it is the full definition. We got two of them here. One is excrement.
There you go. There's your odor.
And the other is something that is morally degrading. So polite people do not discuss odor in public. Don't talk about poop. And it is Middle English from Anglo-French, from ord, which is dirty or foul, and from Latin horridus, which is horrid. First known use is 14th century, so yeah, been around for a little bit.
My poop is pretty hard.
Yes, and it should not be discussed in public, as I've said in the example. So that kind of leads us to closing remarks. I mean, if we're going to go out on a poop joke, I mean.
Yeah, no. We're too high class to end everything on a poop joke. At least I hope so.
Yeah, well, that's what closing remarks are. They're going to bring us right back up. Jules, what you got?
Man, make me go first.
Yeah, for a
big
change.
Big meaty. All right. I'm sure everybody probably knows I am a cyberpunk nut. And also kind of like near future pseudo-dystopian thing.
Yeah.
I've got a book by Cory Doctorow, and it's called Little Brother. And it's, dude, it is fantastic. It's about, the main character is, you know, he's 17 years old, and he's a, you know, hacker, kind of techno, is not a blackout. He's more gray hat, but he also likes doing a lot of the augmented reality games. And while he's out, now think almost doing Pokemon Go, but it's, the game is actually a heck of a lot more cooler because you're getting clues and solving a mystery rather than trying to catch invisible monsters. And while everybody is out, and they've cut school, you know, trying to get all this, the data for their game, there's an assumed terrorist attack and the city goes into lockdown and they get blackbagged. And pretty much after all this happens, it's the Department of Homeland Security decides to turn it up to past 11. They go to 12. What the hell? So,
nice.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, this kid's tech hack know-how, it's just like when Big Brother, you know, gets too big, that's what Little Brother's there for, which is, you know, the idea of the whole hacker counterculture fight the establishment. But the cool thing about it is, a lot of the stuff, the technology is real, and the technology is, it can be done today. And the situation they're talking about, we can imagine it happening. So, and it was really cool in the back of the book. One of the inspirations for this was the guy who he hacked his own PlayStation to get back the Linux installation capabilities that was removed from it. So it's that kind of an idea.
Nice.
So that was cool. That was part of the inspiration for some of the hardware they used, you know. And I'll quote Dan from Extra Credits: "You do not want to mess with people who install Linux on their PlayStations."
No.
So, and you know, it's for, and it's pretty much is like, okay, how do you, when information is blacked out and the government's controlling a lot of the, you know, that, how do you do it? So it's a lot of fun. I recommend it. It's not a hard read. It's the book's thick, but it's not, you're not reading James Joyce. Let me just put it that way. It's so much easier to understand and it just flows so perfectly. So I highly recommend it. Go for it.
Cool. I think I actually read a little bit of that one before. I didn't get all the way through because I got distracted by some other works, but
There's a sequel called Homeland. Yeah. The sequel came out, I think, a year or two ago. It's called Homeland. So, you know, the main character's adventures, Marcus, they still continue. So, you know, it doesn't just end there. And I like it. It's a proper continuation of a story. So
nice.
Yeah. So what do you guys got? Come on. Give me stuff to put in my brains.
Well, besides just writing, I have been playing one of my sources for inspiration for RPGs and other writing. Playing a lot of Final Fantasy XIV lately.
Yay! Like,
a lot. If you're not familiar...
You know, you need to write.
I know.
You're supposed to have so many words done.
I hit my word goals.
All right, awesome.
And then I played. So, okay. So basically, if you don't know, Final Fantasy XIV is a... It's one of the MMOs for the Final Fantasy setting. So, it's cool, it's fun, this is not the podcast, this gets all the ins and outs of it, but I'm
excited. It's good to get inspiration. Nudge,
right.
Nudge.
But I am excited because they recently had their fan fest, which was kind of what they used to kind of reach out to the community. A lot of games are trying to do that more and more now. And so they officially announced next summer the second expansion for the game is coming out, Stormblood.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. Looks like a lot of fun. The teaser trailer they have it suggests we'll be visiting lands that they've been talking about pretty much since the game first came out, and basically reclaim them from an evil empire. Because, you know, it's Final Fantasy, that's what you do. You fight evil empires and you win.
Yeah. With four people.
Depends. Some of these raids are up to 24 people.
No, that's not Final Fantasy. Final Fantasy 4, maybe 6 on the outside.
No.
That's all your party is allowed.
Oh, you, when was the last Final
Spider,
Fantasy you
Red
played?
Mage, White Mage and Black Mage.
Well, Red Mage, actually, is hinted as maybe one of the classes. Because one of the main developers likes to come out with shirts teasing what's going to be the new character. For example, last expansion, Heavensward, while that was being announced and they hadn't said the classes were yet, he wore a Batman shirt. And one of the new classes was Dark Knight. And then
nice. He
later wore a James Bond shirt, and one of the new classes ended up being a machinist kind of gunsmith. So kind of gunman thing. So the shirt he happened to wear this time was a Scarlet Witch shirt. Red Mage.
Yeah, that sounds like it.
Yeah. So that's what we're hoping on. But also, seriously, man, four characters? The standard for Final Fantasy now is 3.
Well, okay, I'm going to tell you, the last one I played was 10, so...
That was 3 as well.
No, you could have 4. Most of the time you had 4 in your group.
I'm pretty sure it was 3.
No, I always had 4.
I'm gonna Google this right now. Typey, typey, typey.
Well, you can do it, but I remember having 4 like in my group all the time.
Well, you had
because I had Titus, I had the chick that could heal,
Yuna,
and then I had the black mage,
Lulu. Too many belts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, too many belts, and then. I also had, what was his name with the one hand always in his jacket?
Orin.
That was my party, like those 4.
No, you can only have 3 people in your at any given time.
Mm-hmm. No.
You only had 3 people active, and then there was Waka, Kimari, and Riku.
Yeah.
But no, you only had, during combats, there was only 3 people.
Mm-hmm. The last one I had 4, I believe, was Final Fantasy VI.
Okay, maybe. Last time I played, that was the last one I played, so how long ago was that? Take it into
almost
account.
Almost 20 years.
Almost, yeah. To be fair. Yeah.
No, it's more 16.
To be fair.
It was around 2000.
It's been a while since an official non-MMO Final Fantasy has come out.
My shout-out is for a podcast, because I listen to so many, and I do love podcasts. And this is, it's called The Eastern Border.
I just started listening to that on your rec.
By, the guy's name is Christoph, and he is Latvian. And it's his thing is it's telling stories, like personal stories, about life, what life was like in these satellite countries under Russian regime. And it's phenomenal. And I have I have an idea for one of my thieves guilds now based on something that he talks about in that show. And he's a gamer. He plays Warhammer 40K.
Cool.
But
oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've got, in Shadowrun, one of the organized crime groups are the Vori, which are the Russian mafia. He actually did an entire episode on the Vori and, like, where they came from and how they kind of work. And it's just chock full of like ideas. And the Christoph is actually a journalist by trade. And he did another show on Chernobyl where he actually went all the way across the country and talked to two of the surviving members that were at Chernobyl when it melted down.
Wow.
Ooh, I haven't gotten that far yet.
And it's, you can feel the emotion when he's talking about it. I mean, this is a man who really gets what it is to be a journalist. And I love this show. And he doesn't have nearly enough episodes for me. And he's been doing some other stuff with some other people. But these ones, The Eastern Border, is just amazing. And he's getting ready to start a thing where he's talking about like the gulags and all of that, like the punishment system in Russia.
Yeah, going to Siberia, what that meant.
And who went? It was just absurd, the numbers that he's like saying these are the official numbers. It was probably higher than that. I mean, and you get a real feel for what it was like, the culture that they have, where they're talking about the most depressing things, and he's just throwing jokes in there because that's how they've learned to deal with being so dark, is that they have to throw these elements of comedy in. Otherwise, they would just lose themselves in the misery.
Yeah, they go into a lot of the Russian self-deprecating type of humor, too. And it explains where that comes from.
Yeah, and I mean, it's such a good show. I've only got, like, I think 3 more episodes from the back catalog to finish. And 2 of them are, like, 3.5 hours each. So.
Yeah, they're brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah, I have to thank you for recommending that to me. I'm listening to it. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, I mean, he really nails so many good things. And I mean, like I said, I'm drawing inspiration for ideas for things or other games from kind of a realistic history show that's not funny. Very? And that's just one part of the world. What?
No, that sounds amazing. I'm definitely going to have to check this out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, and as always, all of our shout outs, there are links in the show notes because we're in the doobly doos.
The source for almost everything awesome we talk about.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it's great. And I feel that everyone should listen. And if you can,
if you can support this dude in any way you can.
Speaking of support, guess what we did, guys?
What do we do?
We started a Patreon.
Hey.
And it's all the way at the end. Actually, I'm just going to, but yeah, we have a Patreon.
Yay.
And hopefully people will come and see what we're going to do. It's at www.patreon.com/seizethegm. And we've got some pretty cool little things in there for rewards and whatnot. So, and it's pretty cheap.
Yeah.
Cool.
It is. We're starting with a penny.
So, hey, that's how you get those numbers up. Episodes.
Yeah. And for a penny and for a pound, though.
Yeah. You know, so. And there's going to be special stuff that I'll do just for patrons. Like maybe throwing some maps up on there for people, and because I like to draw maps and other fun stuff. So hopefully, people will enjoy what we're doing, and we'll throw some dough at us if they can. So
awesome.
Well, I think that is going to wrap it up. So.
Yep.
Because we are at a full hour, which is 15 minutes more than what we wanted. But hey, we had some really good stuff here at the end.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. Well, it has been a blast, and I will see you all next week.
Works for me. I'll see you then, dude.
Toodles. All right.
You can contact us or the show using Twitter, Facebook, or regular old email. Twitter accounts are, mine is at Zendead.
I'm at Jules Podcaster.
And you can find me at Null Operations.
And the show's Twitter account is at SeizeTheGM. You can email me at Zendead@SeizeTheGM.com.
And me at Jules@SeizeTheGM.com.
And me at nulloperations@seizethegm.com.
We're also on Facebook. Find us at http://www.facebook.com/seizethegm. So thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted material references herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
Music for this show is from Magnatune.com. Links to the artists will be in the show notes. Once again, we will see you next week.